This episode has been recorded remotely, so do bear that in mind while you hear the audio.
Okay, silence outside.
Sound.
Rolling.
Camera.
Rolling.
Yeah.
Kill.
Hi, you're listening to Have I Made It Yet? I'm your host Ashwin Rajshekar and I work as a sound engineer based out of Hyderabad. This podcast features candid conversations with various professionals from the world of filmmaking. They come from various departments with different experiences of the industry and their own unique stories to narrate. In this episode, we're joined by Pranav Pingle, a director and producer based out of Hyderabad. He started his career in media interning at NDTV, after which he did his master's in filmmaking from Bristol, UK. He then founded Mirage Media, a production company in Hyderabad. He has worked as an assistant to Nandini Reddy. He has also worked as director for Occupied, a docu-series that follows five young artists in occupied Palestine. The teaser to this has released recently. Do check it out. He's currently working on Kubool Hai, a web series set in Hyderabad, which talks about human trafficking. So to start off, can you just tell me about the kind of journey you had? Because a lot of people, they make a choice between, you know, either assisting someone or doing ad films and short films. But you've done a bit of both. So what's that been like?
So I think the journey's been quite, it's been a fantastic journey thus far. So I went to school in HPS, which is Hyderabad Public School, Begumpet. Then soon after that, went to Mary's, did my undergrad in Yusuf Gudda in Mass Comm. While that was going on, managed to get an internship just in my final year with Meditech in Bangalore. And then from Meditech, I worked with NDTV in Bangalore. And the option was pretty much, so I worked there for about, I was in Bangalore for about 6 to 8 months. And it really sort of opened my eyes up to just the way that people outside of Hyderabad would work. I did quite a bit of work on the ground while I was in college. But while I was in Bangalore, I think that I really enjoyed working with people from all walks of life and just understanding the kind of work that they would do. Like, we'd be in the OB van, we'd record sound, we'd make jokes with the driver and their journeys. They've been working with NDTV for about 15, 16 years. The cameraman that I sort of worked with, I think he studied only till the 9th. His name is Govind. He's a legendary cameraman in NDTV in the Bangalore office. And he sort of taught me a lot of things about, in general, about being appreciative about the place that you're in and how you can sort of spring out from there. He was actually, even though I was working with the editor, with the senior correspondent there, I felt that my relationship with Govind sort of shaped a lot of my views and thoughts and just generally being observant about everyone else that's technical who's usually forgotten in today's day and age. Soon after that, that internship had come to an end. I came back home and so I said, okay, fine, what next? And applied to the UK. So the application went through, but there was one sort of thing at home saying that, you know, either you get into the top five unis or you don't go, which was a fair, which was a fair sort of answer that my parents and family had sort of given me.
Yeah.
So having said that, I applied to 6-7, but the one that we really wanted and I really wanted was Bristol, and that sort of happened. And went to Bristol, did my master's in film and television production there. I think it's by far one of the best experiences that I've had there. Not only in terms of understanding filmmaking, understanding people, but just generally sort of seeing how people can work together and how the exposure that it comes with and the kind of relationships that you build on that is truly phenomenal. Like, I had really great friends from all over the world who sort of came together in every aspect of filmmaking. We'd go to class 4 times a week, 3 times a week. We'd just have conversation about things that we really like about our country and things that we would experience, which you won't have in anywhere else. And I felt that really sort of helped the kind of stories that I'd like to tell. And that journey in from Bristol was truly phenomenal, because the kind of films that we made in uni and the kind of films that sort of propels Mirage Media and the team that I'd like to set up with, because that's the primary importance is the team and sort of align.
So Mirage Media is the company that you run right now, right? Making ad films and production work for films.
Yeah, so that's primarily what I run, and we've been doing this for about, as soon as I came back from uni, for about 8-9 years. But like I said, so when we finished with uni, everyone sort of said that, okay, fine guys, we'll catch up later. And most of my class sort of applied for like jobs, gigs, working in all over Europe, all over the world. So then I came back to Hyderabad and I sort of sat down and I said, okay, fine, what do I really want to do? And I knew from uni that I was really passionate about working in the documentary space. I was always very inclined with working in a space where I like challenges, and I always felt that picking up documentaries is always a challenge because either you don't have the money to make a documentary or you don't have the right sort of team to make it happen because you're always caught on a really tight spot. But I said that, okay, fine, this is what I really want to do. And I got a gig in Bombay to work in this really big production house. At that time, it was really huge. But I went to my dad and I said, okay, fine, this is what I want to do. But I don't think I really want to go to Bombay. And I want to set up something on my own and see how it goes. So he said, you're insane and you're stubborn anyway. I really don't know how this is going to work, but you got to figure it out. Don't look back at me for any sort of financial support, which was a fair play. He said, I educated you. I've done everything possible that any parent can do. And now you're on your own and you got to figure things out. And I felt that that was a very important part to be able to propel, because that's the drive that you sort of need. You need to be pushed in a certain way. Like, even if I get something easy right now, I really don't think I'll enjoy it as much as the journey to be able to dig through the mud and finally do it on your own. So I felt that was a very important aspect, and that's how we set it up. So we set up Mirage Media at that stage 8-9 years ago. I really didn't know how to sort of run a company. I really didn't know anything. All I knew was a little bit of work that I learned while I was in film school, a little bit of work that I learned while I was at NDTV, and a little bit of work learned while I was at Meditech. And I was a chaiwala for a bit at NDTV for 3 weeks. It really humbles you. It sort of puts you in a level where if someone asks you to do something, you never answer saying that this is not my job. Initially, I always felt that, you know what, why am I being asked to do this when there's probably someone else, the office boy, who can get the chai? It did play on my mind. But when all of that happened, I realized that that was the biggest learning, to be able to know that it doesn't matter what your job is, your role or your job, you got to do whatever you got to do. So Binash Media was set up, but it wasn't really set up. So simultaneously, I got a gig with this place called the Delphic Games. So Delphic Games is an art and culture, Olympics for the arts. And it was set up in India by this guy called Ramesh Prasanna, who sort of set it up to be able to bring the arts to Goa. So he said, Pranav, you're really interested in the arts. Why don't you work with me for a year, year and a half, 2 years, till you figure your stuff out, and it'll be really interesting. So I said, okay, fine, I'll take the gig, I'll take the offer, but I have one thing that I really want to do. So he asked me, what is it? So I said, I'm going to set up my own company within your company. You have to give me one room. So he said, okay, fine, this guy's young, this guy's doesn't know what he's doing. He's probably, the usual thing was, he's probably just going to blow up all his money with his salary, which was happening. So the first couple of months, couple of years, no, I won't even call it salary. It was like we were paying allowances to people to work. So at that stage, Arvind from Annapurna, who's another genius editor, who's also the editor of Occupied, and he's like a younger brother to me right now. Arvind and Prithvi had started working with us and started working on small time ads.
Right. Even Prithvi is my senior, who's from Annapurna.
Yeah. So Prithvi, who's the cinematographer of Occupied, and Arvind started working together. We said, okay, fine, let's see how this goes. For 2-3 years on end, we started working. And at the same time, I was sort of allotted to set up the team for the Delphic Games. We had Sunny and Almas. Sunny is literally the backbone of what Mirage Media is today. So Sunny is the head of production. I remember him coming, I think just straight out of Mary's. He had this big afro walk into the office and he was confused. But there was something about him that really sort of said that this guy has something in him. It was about to be able to find a solution in any given point. And that's something that I connected with. And then Almas joined in. So Almas was with us for, she's also headed the research for Occupied. They all came along and it was brilliant. At the same time, Urmes, who's also the art director for Kubule, he was interested in the arts and he started working with us in the Delphic Games. It so happened that most of these people were still working together even after 8-9 years. 2 years down the line, the Delphic Games sort of tanked. it didn't really happen. And we were off looking for a place to rent. We took like a small one-bedroom apartment and we had one computer. And that's how we worked our way from one computer. And then at the same time, when I came back from UK, Fez and Umair, who were my partners on Boxcar, Daimi and Mirage, sort of set up their own unit. Earlier, it was called Yellow Studio Works. And as soon as I came back, we worked on a project together with Umair called Handle With Care. And that was our first sort of documentary that we worked on together for the L.V. Prasad Eye Institute. It was shot on a 550D. It was shot with an eyeball microphone to sort of get the audio. It had flicker throughout the video because we couldn't afford.
It's like the bare minimum.
It was bare minimum. It was bare minimum. And while all of that happened, me and Umair worked on a play together called Lysistrata with another really good friend of ours called Kashif Ali, who's done the marketing for Bahubali. We always work together. So that's how Fez, Umair and I sort of know each other for a long time. So like 12, 15 years. So I decided, okay, fine, because my dream, the aim wasn't to make money, to be extremely honest. The aim was to be able to find people who are really passionate about just telling stories that people wouldn't want to touch. So we did a documentary on the leprosy home. We did a documentary on underage women, rape and prostitution. So our whole area of interest stemmed from stories that really moved us.
And these are stories that are like extremely sensitive.
Yeah, really, I think we're really blessed to have people who are like-minded. Because everyone, we were extremely open about the money that we were making. So we knew that, okay, fine, this is the money that's coming in. This is the money that's going out. This is the amount of money I'm taking home. And this is the amount of money that has to go to the equipment for the next month. And we still don't have money to pay for the next couple of months for rent. But we'll figure things out. Having said that, you sort of hit moments in your life at that stage saying, you know, everyone else around you sort of is doing well. It does play on your mind. I won't say that it never played on my mind, but it never really affected, never mind how bad the visuals were. Like if I look at it 8-9 years ago, how compromised the visuals were, how compromised the audio was, the story still moves us. And that's when I realized that we're on the right track. To have people around you, I think that's the big thing for Mirage Media, is to be able to have people around you who will always have your back. That journey had been going on 4-5 years after doing number of ads. Then slowly we picked up. We started working on ads. We started taking on really cool gigs. We started shooting music festivals. We shot weddings. We did everything under the sun that really needed to be done. Just so that we could make money to fund stories that really moved us. And I felt that when you have less, it is actually more. Because when you have everything right in front of you in a plate, you really don't appreciate it. And I really felt that sort of gave us the drive, gave us the push to work harder. 4, 5, 6 years ago, that's when we did an interview for BBC on this fantastic lady called Sunita Krishnan, who runs the Prajwala Foundation. She basically rescues women who've been raped, tortured, trafficked. And the whole idea of Kubool Hai came from that entire interview that we did. We were so moved by the interview, at least I was really moved, about this one incident, which was this young girl whose basically mother was raped and tortured and trafficked. And the pimp would sort of tell her that, you know what, you should have 10 customers in a day. And she had to do whatever he said. And the family had sold her to this pimp. But when that entire process happened, she had given birth to a child. And the child was under the bed while the customers were coming. Eventually, Prajwala had saved her life and they were into rehab. She was telling me about the story about this little girl. So this little girl basically had a drawing competition, which was like a rehab center for them to forget all the miseries of the past and all the bad things that sort of happened to them. This little child's story sort of stays with me forever. I don't know, it just never leaves me. She goes up to the judge and says, you know, sir, you didn't give me a chocolate. Was my painting not good enough? And the judge says, no, beta, your painting was fantastic. Here, take a 5-star. She takes the 5-star and she lifts her skirt up. Just imagining that visual, I said, you know, this story has to be told. Didn't have the money at that time. Me and Sunny have been having this conversation. And I said, you know, now's the time. I think we're good enough in the sense that we're exposed to, we've done so many things. Fast forward a couple of years ago, and the Palestinian project was far before all of what happened with Prajwala and the interview with Prajwala. Sunny, Almas and I, and we would constantly do research, okay? No money in the pocket, but doing research. like, which I felt a little bit strange, but there was something in that madness that really sort of moves you. He said, okay, fine, Sunny, let's do the research. I have a friend's wedding. So me and my wife, girlfriend at the time, had a friend's wedding in Bangkok. We said, okay, fine, well, I'm going to go for this holiday for my friend's wedding and I'll catch you back. By then, you know, you guys figure the research out and whatever. And we've been doing this research for a long time, but those were the main conversations. We wasn't worried about how much money was there in the bank. I said, Sunny, let's figure things out once I'm back. So we go to Vietnam, we're at this airport. Suddenly, a couple of friends and my wife sees this guy and they say, okay, fine, let's go grab a smoke from him. So I said, okay, fine, go. I'll stay with the bags. My wife comes up to me and says, you know, Pranav, there's a really interesting guy. You should talk to him. And this guy turns out to be the legend Shadi Zaktan, who actually made everything happen for Occupied. And I start talking to him and I tell him, you know, I'm really mad about Palestine. I really feel that it's a phenomenal place. And I'm really so, I don't know why I was really obsessed about it. I really loved the place. There was something about it. And he said, buddy, don't worry. Whenever you need to come to Palestine, just give me a call and you can stay in my house. Now, this is a guy
that's really sweet.
Yeah. Now, exactly. That's really sweet. But one in a million really work and the rest, everyone says it for the sake of saying it. I said, Shadi, are you really serious? Come back to India, have that conversation with him. I said, yeah, buddy, I'm definitely going to get in touch with you. It's really going to be really interesting, etc. He texts me randomly on Facebook. So he says, how are you doing? I said, I'm really good, buddy, and this and that. And that conversation sort of ends. And come back to India, talking to Sunny, Almas, Arvind and Prithvi, saying, guys, I really think that now's the time to do our Occupied documentary series. It's going to be international and we really have to do this. Fortune favors the brave. Magically, we got a really good gig for Flipkart, made enough money, put together all the equipment, camera, borrowed cameras from friends. And everyone literally said, Pranav, you're mad, this is not going to happen. So I said, okay, fine, dude, it's not going to happen. But I'm stubborn, so I said, okay. For me, it really doesn't affect me if someone says something. I know what I have to do. And I know what commitments I make to people and I know how I can fulfill them. Because that's the sort of thing, especially for me, it's very important that if I say something or if I'm going to do something for someone, if I've committed to something, I'll make sure it happens. So we started applying for our visas. We started saying that in the visa application that we're just going for a holiday in Israel, etc. And everyone said, boss, who the fuck is going to give you like a visa entry into Palestine? I'm pretending that you're a photographer who's going to document this lovely country, Israel, when all your Facebook posts and all the things that you're sharing is everything just the opposite of what you've said. So I said, okay, fine, let's just give it a shot. Fast forward a couple of weeks later, we all go to Delhi, this and that. We get our visas. And next thing you know, we are on a flight, landed up in Palestine and shot one of the most life-changing series that I think at least anyone in the team could ever ask for. Because everything that we are today is all because of Palestine and Occupied.
You were talking about how you were like obsessed with Palestine and there was something that was pulling you towards it. Once I started working on it, I spent a couple of months, but ever since then I feel like I have that obsession. Where, you know, I really want to go there and see the places that I have seen just on screen.
So it was phenomenal. Like we stayed there, I messaged Shadi that night and I told him, buddy, I'm going to reach there. Do you even remember me? He said, yeah, buddy, just call me once you reach Jerusalem and I'll tell you how to cross the border. 35 days we stayed in his home. I've never met anyone as more generous than the Palestinians in my life. They'll go through anything in their life, but they will always be there to give. In today's day and age, in today's world, who are the givers? No matter what they're going through, no matter what pain, no matter what struggle, they will always have a smile on their face. Like I felt the series, even though there were so many thoughts, there was so much research that Sunny and Almas had put into, we really thought about all the characters. But after going there, the characters sort of were elevated into 1000x. Every single person, whoever we met, was flabbergasted and shocked that why some mad Indians decide to come and shoot a series on art and occupation. Because there's enough footage about all the other things that are going on in Palestine. But if you look at everything else, where is there something that someone's talking about? Just someone being, despite what's going around, they're still living. And they still have a smile on their face.
And like, wait, before you go on, how much footage was there? How much did he shoot?
We shot 35 days. We shot with a drone where we probably shouldn't have. And we avoided 10 years of prison. We shot every checkpoint. We shot people's houses being demolished. We shot every single thing under the sun. And this is three people doing probably, I think, 10, 12 people's job, carrying the equipment, doing sync sound. So the film was made by everyone. Yes, the idea, everything sprung across from me, but the film is made with everyone. And that's the beauty about documentary filmmaking. It teaches you that everything doesn't have to be in big quantities. It's in quality. It was truly phenomenal. Like, we're shooting inside a bar with three mics, two cameras, and Arvind sort of figuring out how to do the sound on a Tascam recorder, but somehow managed to get some of the most beautiful audio outside, and then you managed to do a phenomenal job to sort of put it together. Like, where does that happen? Like, I felt that we really pushed ourselves at every single stage. So that happened 2.5 years into that. Uday hurt his back, so he couldn't do the sound. That's how...
Uday was supposed to do the sound design for the entire series.
Poor guy, he had back injury and he was bedridden. Then we met Karthik and Karthik Parmar, who's also the cinematographer for Kubul Hai. Karthik was doing the color and then he introduced us to you, and then everything sort of came together. And I feel that's the beauty about this project. Like, everyone worked on it not for a financial cause, but for the cause itself. And everyone sort of became attached to it.
Everything that you're saying, it makes a lot of sense that, you know, you are so emotionally driven towards doing this that you get it done no matter what. But can you talk about such things that happened during Occupied?
So,
like, you talked about getting footage of things that you shouldn't have because it was so risky. That could have ended you up in jail.
Okay, so let's start about things that could have gone wrong with Occupied and how we sort of battled those. First thing is, our visa shouldn't have been granted, because we were supposed to be shooting a film, rather doing a photo essay on Israel and the beauty of Israel, but that wasn't the case in point. Second thing is, while we were in Palestine, most of the drone footage that we shot in the entire West Bank, we're not allowed to shoot over settlements or in any Area C. So Area C, Area A or Area B. So basically, the West Bank is divided into Area A, B and C. It's controlled by Israel. But just for namesake, it says that, you know, the Palestinians have rights to control it, but it's not really the case. So we were in this recording studio shooting Salik's video, and we suddenly heard this huge demolition noise and firing going on. So Prithvi and I and then Irv sort of went outside, and we started seeing this house being demolished, and this not young man, he was in his 50s, and his entire house being demolished right in front of our eyes. And that was the stage when we started getting goosebumps. I remember Prithvi shooting with the zoom lens at that stage, or I was shooting with the zoom lens, and Prithvi was really close getting the footage of the soldiers going and demolishing his home. We could have easily gone to jail at that point. I think we could have easily been carted away. But somehow we managed to shoot that, quickly come back into the recording studio that Salik had, which is actually one of our characters on the episodes. And we went back, and I think that evening, none of us sort of really spoke. It was so heavy for us that we just sort of, like, it was too much to sort of handle. And then you sort of think about all the things that you have and never to be ungrateful. Like, every single thing that you have in your life, you have to be grateful for, no matter what goes on. So that was a very powerful incident while we were there. I was in Hebron. I was shooting while Prithvi and Arvind were shooting something else. And I was at a checkpoint, and there was this young Palestinian kid who was randomly being checked by an Israeli soldier. We've seen people pissing in Jerusalem on the walls of holy sites. We've seen trash being thrown in Hebron on Palestinian homes. So all of that could have put us in really heavy spots, because we're not really asked to record. You're not allowed to record. They have the power to sort of delete every footage that you have. But yeah, then the push becomes so hard that you don't want, it's like a drug. You want to keep on going.
Yeah.
And that sort of drove us insane. And by the end of the 30, 35 days, the footage was phenomenal. The stories were phenomenal. The hurdles, apart from shooting it, there were so many hurdles while we were shooting it. But again, when you come back home, you have to get back to reality where the finances are important. And then we picked up. So one thing that was really important, which was in my mind ever since we set up Mirage, was you got to do things that you don't love in order to do things that you love.
Yeah.
So that was the motto. I'll never say that, you know, this job is not mine. Work was work. And every single person, whoever's there and whoever's working with us, even now at Mirage, knows that. Like, it doesn't matter what the work is work. We need to start respecting that. Everything else sort of starts to fall into place. So we came back, we were really financially blown. But somehow, I don't know, things started to fall in place. We started getting a lot more ads. So all the money that we were making in that was sort of enough for us to sustain our business. After we came back to India, there were so many things that were going on. Like there were so many thoughts that were running in our minds. What's next? What's going to happen now? But we were so occupied that everything else we said, you know what, let's just put this aside.
Yeah, I can't even imagine taking so much footage that you've recorded and putting it together into, you know, a shorter form than what you have actually recorded, right?
So yeah, that's the thing. So we had like four and a half TB worth of footage. We left one set of data in Jordan with a friend of ours called Nabil, who's also the poet on one of our episodes. So he said, buddy, if you get caught at the Israeli airport, don't worry, I'll send you a backup from there. But that never happened because our suitcases, mine and I think Arvind's suitcase was stopped. But Prithvi had a backpack and he managed to get the footage through. And that's how we sort of made occupied. So when you ask about the obstacles are so many, but it's on you how you sort of jump the obstacle. I don't look at the obstacle as an obstacle. I actually feel that, okay, fine. If this has come to me, it's only because that I can handle it.
It's part of the process.
Yeah, it's part of the process. And I feel that, okay, fine. It's because that I know for a fact that I can make this happen. And that's always been my attitude. You've seen that. I'll never say no. I'll face something front on. Like, I won't sit back, cry about it.
But not saying no, don't you think there is a limit to what you can do? Like, at some point, you might have to say no to something or to cut back on losses, perhaps.
So when I meant saying no to the project, and what's best for the project, because everything else is below the project. So even I am not that important. The project is the most important thing. It is not an individual. It is the entire team that has made the project happen. And the project, in this particular case, I am leading that project. So I should be able to be a judge about what's best for the project. And in most many cases, in kinds of whenever something goes wrong, everyone sort of puts their hands up. But that's because that's their personality. And I don't blame people for that. It's just how they are. But for me, I feel that, okay, fine. If there's a problem, we'll find a solution and that's it. And how can you limit yourself? I don't see anything. Name one out of 10 people, not only in India, who actually gone to Palestine and shot a documentary series on art and occupation. And that was the target. Like, under 30, do something that really moves you and should impact you. It wasn't the finance, it wasn't anything. It was the cause, and we did it for the cause, and that's it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed working on it.
Yeah, that's the thing. So when something moves you, everything else falls into place. It's the right people, it's the right setup, it's the right frame. It's not the camera, it's not the sound, it's the people around you. So I felt that was the big takeaway. Like, Occupied is a collective effort where people sort of really enjoyed the process. But if you ask anyone who says, what has Occupied done for you and what has Palestine done for you, it's life-changing. You've been part of this journey. When you've done a phenomenal job with the sound. Like, when you listen to that, and you've worked on so many other things, I'm sure, but you know what it feels. You know what your heart beats like.
Yeah. You've talked about the kind of journey you've had with Miraj, and you've brought around you people who are extremely like-minded, people who think like you, people who are more than ready to collaborate and move mountains with you. Do you try to form like a barrier between, you know, the friendship part of it? Because I'm sure they're close enough that they're part of your life. They're part of who you are in a way. But at the same time, they're also co-workers, and you being the leader of most projects that you do, you also have to push them at certain times. So do you try to divide these two things, or do they merge in some way?
With certain people, it does, but I try my best in sort of... So everyone knows, like, I can be extremely calm, but I also have a very... I have a switch that flips, but... And I believe work is work. When it's work, it's work. And when it's play, it's really like having a good time. Yeah, I'll have a good time. But when it's work, when there's so many things on the line and so many people who are dependent on each and every one, we can't mess around. The attitude towards work, the job is to get it done. It's not to talk about the excuses, it's not to talk about what someone has overslept, what someone has not done. It's only to talk about, okay, fine, there's a problem, let's find a solution. Like, I won't even entertain. If you had asked me this question, say, about 5-6 years ago, I would dwell into it a little bit, say that, okay, fine. Even a couple of years ago, I would say, okay, fine, you know, maybe he's going through this, that, all of that. I'll All of that at a personal level is important, which I will care for as a friend. And everyone's a friend and everyone's part of the family. But when it comes to work, there are basic responsibilities that one has to uphold. No matter how small or how big they are, it is what it is.
So you have also talked about one of the first documentaries that impacted you a lot, the one with Sunitha Krishnan, right?
It wasn't a documentary that we made. We just shot one part of the Hyderabad series. That was what propelled Kubule.
Yeah. So in a way, it is the same emotion that you were trying to capture in the documentary that you want to recreate in fiction. Would it be right to say that?
Yeah, you'll be just close to being right. But yeah, so that was the aim.
Okay, so documentary, the way you go about it is very different. You have to do a lot of research, and once you go on field, it's going to change. And then on the edit table, again, it's going to completely change from what you imagined it would be. Whereas for fiction, you try to make it as much to the plan as you thought it would be. And you have much more control over how things are going to be. So how has your experience been so far with Kubul Hai, trying to capture that emotion and bring it out, as opposed to the documentary?
Occupied is always going to have a special place. There's nothing that's going to be anytime soon, unless I go back and do a feature film in Palestine. But Kubul Hai is very, very close to the entire team. I think I'll give you a run through. Kubul Hai is happening because of Occupied.
How so?
It is because of when you look at the trailer or when you look at the first episode of Occupied. Like, for example, we've done a lot of ads. We've done a lot of work in the documentary space. But if you look at the traditional way that the industry works, they're going to ask you, okay, fine, what is the Telugu short film or the Telugu movie that you have made? So I never went with that approach because that's a very traditional approach and a lot of people go with that. I said, this is what we've done. This is Occupied. This is, I think, something that no one else has done. And it really takes a lot of balls to be able to do something like that. So when you sort of have these conversations about people telling you about how hard it is going to be being able to make a web series like this, and when you look at everything else, it really isn't that hard. When I looked at Occupied and when I look at this, for me, I felt that, you know, making a web series or making a feature film is not going to be that hard. But a lot of people have other opinions. Yes, there's a lot many things that go on into it. There's so many
moving parts.
The sound, the camera, someone's not there, the actor has some tantrum going on, the vanity van, the AC doesn't work, the bathroom's not clean. And to shoot a project like Kubul Hai, everyone knew that it's going to be a challenging project. And that's the thing. Basically, even when we were doing Kubul Hai, we were sort of very clear that, okay, fine, there are going to be a lot of questions. The first question was, Pranav, how are you going to do like... So the same thing. So when we created Kubul Hai, Sunny and I put this thing together. And we said, okay, fine, let's go to make this happen. And then we brought on Fares and Umair. So a bunch of people came together and then put together the entire story and to be able to elevate it further. But the initial question that a lot of people started to ask was, you know, Pranav, it's going to be in Urdu and in Telugu. And what are the sort of benchmarks that you sort of look at? So I said, you know, that's the thing, no? Most of the Hyderabadi language has been used in very comical sort of ways. Like it's always been made fun of. Most of the Telangana characters or the Telangana language itself has been used, sort of, I won't say sidelined, but hasn't been used as much as...
And that's true even in Telugu films, I feel like. Until now, even the Telangana language, it's either the villain using it or it's a comic role.
Yeah, so I felt, you know, I come from... So my dad's side of the family comes from Warangal. My grandfather's family. So I said, okay, fine, let's sort of pick this story. And Hyderabad is a very diverse place. The beauty of Hyderabad is to be able to live together in harmony and the language. The Dakini language is beautiful. Some of my best friends are Muslim. And I felt that I love the way that they speak. I love the food that they eat. I love the kind of mannerisms that they have. And I love the way, I just love the way that in Hyderabad, we can be able to live together with everyone and just be, given the current climate.
Yeah.
So that was the first barrier. Pranav, you know, it can't be like this. It should be like that. Pranav, are you sure? And this happened just, Kubul Hai happened just before the lockdown hit, the first lockdown.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so I said, okay, fine, that back and forth, all the 6 episodes were done. Everything sort of went through. And then eventually I just said, you know what? What is the beauty of Kubul Hai? The beauty of Kubul Hai is to keep it authentic. It's to keep it as pure as possible. in the best form that we could. And it is an attempt to be able to make something in its purest form. And I feel that every single day as a filmmaker, as a creator, is to be able to learn from every single thing around you. You know, the kind of things that people say when the cinema, the kind of cinema that they consume and the kind of cinema that you consume aren't really on the same platform.
By they, you mean?
Platforms and just general people who'd want to sort of commission a project like this. I won't take names, but yeah. So the kind of content that they would consume, platforms in general, or just the kind of big sort of producers, etc. here is not on the same wavelength. So then you'll hear things like, you know, Pranav, this is not good enough. And you'll hear things that, you know, this should be completely tanked. You have to have something that's really big. And I keep on hearing this word big. And I really don't understand what is big, what is small. Because I've never been brought up in that environment. Like, what is big, what is small is the world. I got confused. So me and Sunny would look at each other. So when all of these talks were happening. And then finally, we met someone who really sort of digged Kubule. We met Karthik at AHA, who's been having our back for AHA for the longest time. He was a phenomenal, like we sort of, the minute we sort of had a conversation with him about Kubule, he said, yeah, dude, I like it. And that was it. I felt like, yeah, but buddy, tell me something. What is it that you don't like? You know, are we good enough? Are we this? Are we that? But I don't. So for me, I never. The entire team, however experienced or inexperienced you are in life. So what I learned, I'll go back to NDTV and to Minitech. Never let someone tell you how good or bad you are. It is on you about how good you are, or how great, or how much better you can be. But don't let ever someone else tell you that you're not good enough. It's because they're not good enough that they're insecure. So in that entire journey, because me and Sunny had been meeting a lot of people when Kubule was ready, we started hearing a lot of things that were negative in nature. Not only just about the story, but dissing the fact about, you know, child trafficking, sheikh marriages, it's been done na bhai, why do you want to do it, are you sure, Urdu mein kon dekhte, usko zyada Telugu kar do. So I said, theek hai, I'm not here to please anyone, I just want to make this story. Sunny and I were determined enough to make this happen. So the next day, or I think a week after that, we met Karthik. Everything went ahead. So he loved it. And then that's how we sort of put together. Kubule was approved and put together. But there's so many things after that. Like you said, the documentary was three people. But this had like 70, 75 people working. So then you start setting up teams, start finding out actors, start finding out so many moving parts. And I really didn't find that extremely difficult, because then everyone sort of fell into place. Like I spoke to Karthik about the story even before the story was sort of put together. I told him this is what it is. Karthik and I, because of Occupied and much before that as well, we spoke about many of his stories.
You're talking about Karthik Parmar.
Karthik Parmar, the DOP for Kubule. He was game for the show. But there were so many things that were happening. The lockdown happened. We were shooting during times of Corona. So the thing about Kubule and the team in Kubule right now, everyone is from all walks of life who've been doing something else but are extremely amazing at what they do now. Even now, I feel that I am learning as a filmmaker. Every day, I'm learning. And everyone else who started off saying that there was Kevin, who was the writer, one of the many writers, who also is doing sound. We have Malesh, who's not a sound engineer, who's working with Ankur on sound. We have Ankur from Goa, we have Karthik from Orissa, we have actors from Bombay, we've got Feroz, who's playing Asif's role from Hyderabad, then we've got Banu from Hyderabad, and everything sort of fell into place. But like you said, to deal with so many people, I don't find it extremely stressful. At times I do, I won't lie, because there's so many stresses to deal with, because it's not only just producing but also directing, but then you have to be able to make sure that the show goes on. And I felt that was a big, to be able to deal with so many things at the same time, you have to find strength somewhere, at least for me. I found strength in a lot of people who gave me a lot of strength when things didn't work out the way that they should have. And people, everyone sort of supported what was going to happen, because I was never, I won't say I was worried. I was never worried, because I really don't get worried. And even if I get worried, no one's going to know. I will keep it within myself, because I feel that no matter what happens, everyone else has to be secure. And even when a lot of things, there were a lot of blockades, things were uncertain for a certain while. In a span of 2 months, we turned things around, which is unheard of. Even when the restart happened just after Kubula had taken a break, 95% of the team was back in the game.
I mean, it really helps that the whole team has faith in the project. And that talks about the quality of the project as well, right? If so many people have faith in the project and they're ready to come back despite whatever problems they're facing, it means that, you know, this is going to happen. Even you get a lot of confidence through that, right?
The confidence and the strength, which I reiterate again, which a lot of people don't talk about, is the team around it. The story is phenomenal. The story is A1. But the team that you surround yourself is your biggest strength. And I believe that in this entire process, because I've been working in documentaries for a long time, that no matter what it is, your team will always be number one. And a film is not made by one person. It's everyone's collective effort. Yes, if you ask me, yeah, Pranav, you created the show. Yes, I did, but everyone made it. I didn't make it alone.
Do you feel like everyone has the right to claim ownership over the film?
Of course, it's their film, it's not mine. It's Sunny's, it's Darshini's, it's Mithil's, it's Sandeep's, it's Satvik's, it's Karthik Parma's. It's every single person, it's Puranj, it's Radhe, the office boy, it's Malnesh. It's the watchman, it's the plumber, it's every guy who's given, it's the lightman, Sai, it's everyone from the unit. It's their film. I'm just the pusher, I'm the guy who just, I'll never let it die, dude. I will never let anything die, no matter what happens. I will make sure that I will go, even if I have to go down and under. But I won't let it hit someone as much as it hits me. And that's again, I go back to something that's really impacted me in my life. When I met someone in Palestine, when he had no home, when he had no food to eat, he went outside and he got us a leg of lamb to eat. It showcases that as long as that the heart is there to be able to do something good for someone, irrespective of how big your pocket is, just the thought of kindness, that is your biggest strength. Your relationship is not built one day, 5 days, one project, two projects. At least for the way that I operate, it is not like that. My relationship is forever. Either it works. If it doesn't work, I'll cut it off. There are no two ways about it. Rohan, I met him. I love the guy. He's completely spaced out. He can't communicate. But he's a phenomenal worker. I love Dheeraj the same way. Dheeraj is also working with Rohan in the art team, in the production design team. Brilliant workers. It's just that why should someone have 3 years of experience to be able to do something? Why should you be your assistant for your whole life? You have to have someone who gives you the strength and the power to be able to do whatever it is. Like, for example, if you asked me, Pranav, why at 30 are you doing this? Because in my entire journey, I've had people who have told me that you're not good enough, that you can't do it, that you'll never be able to do it, and you have to become an assistant for the rest of your life. And I said, no, dude, I'm going to make it on my terms. Make it in the sense that make the film. For different people, make it means differently. For me, it's not about, you know, the fancy car in the driveway. For someone else, it might be something else. But for me, it's very clear. Make it is be able to be around the people who are making this film for you. There has to be one guy who's constantly oiling the wheel. Yeah, it's good. It feels, where do you get that strength, dude? Like, for me, I think that's the strength, no matter what hurdle. Kubula's strength is not in just the story. It is in the team. It is not, and I don't like the term that, you know, we are the technical team. We do not have separate tables. We do not have the lightmen, the cameraman, the assistants, from the food to everyone. Everyone eats the same food. The actors, everyone. The vanity van is a van because we shot an entirely live location. You've seen the madness to handle in Golconda, to handle in Charminar, to handle in all of these.
Yeah, places. I've seen the Instagram posts and it looks mad. Yeah.
We shot in Musi, dude. Like, no one's got permission to shoot in Musi by mosquitoes. 23 hours, 24 hours, we're shooting there. People were worried, saying, Pranav, how the hell are you going to shoot? I said, no, we'll do it. We'll do anything that makes the project work. If we have to do Jadu tomorrow in the morning saying, "Arey, the set boy didn't come," I'll do the Jadu, dude.
So, like, for this project, you mentioned that there's two other directors. So, is it like each of you directs different episodes?
So, basically, I think it's more than collective. Faiz, Omer and I are more or less on the same page when it comes to not only just the episodes, but the way that it's heading. I don't have to be in front of the screen. I don't have to be on someone's head saying that this is what needs to be done. Because, like, you know, handling 100 people, someone has to be able to handle 100 people.
Yeah.
And when you know that someone who is close as your partners who are able to do it, if that means stepping aside for the better of the film, why not? So I don't see it as, yeah, all 6 episodes are ours. At the end of the day, the question that you asked me, it reminds me of something where people are worried about the credit that they get by the end of the show. I'm not worried about the credit that I get by the end of the show, or none of the people in the team are worried about the credit that you get at the end of the show. Between me, Faiz and Umair, the uniformity is there.
But I feel like more than the credit, forget the credit, you're right. Like for a lot of people, it doesn't matter what the credit is. But when you're handing over the wheels of the car to someone else, you need to be able to trust them, right?
But that trust comes if you're in that journey and that relationship for more than 10, 12 years. Now, for example, today, Umair and Karthik are sitting on the short design on the 6th episode. I can step away and say that, okay, fine, we have to make sure that we're shooting in the Musi and I need to handle that close to about 700,000-800,000 people. Now, is making sure that the shoot happens the next day a priority, or how easy is going to be the short design? That's a question that one has to ask. So when you're in sync as a unit,
yeah.
So we don't differentiate between, am I seeing this shot? Am I making sure this is happening? We are aligned way before the story is even put together.
Yeah.
So the alignment exists. And there is no that, okay, fine, main ye kar raha hu, tu wo kar raha, main zyada kaam kar raha hu, main kam kaam kar raha hu. That thinking is not there. That thinking doesn't exist. At least in my mind, it doesn't exist. And I know for a fact between Umair and Faiz, that doesn't exist. So, like, for example, we worked on this during this entire period. I don't think we've had a couple of disagreements, but the vision is there. I know what my vision is. That vision has been conveyed. And all three of us are aligned to that one vision.
And I feel like disagreements are going to happen no matter what when you have a team, right?
Disagreements are there. Not that it doesn't happen. I'll give you that. Disagreements are there. But the uniformity is there. We know what the end goal is. And this, the scale that Kubula is being done, the way that it's, we thought that it will start out to, and the way that it's being done now, it's commendable only because of the team. Where have you heard of drivers doing a paint setup when the painters from the set can't come? Everyone is working because of one thing. Because they love the show and they love the fact that everyone is together. I feel that apart from what's happening in front of the camera, there is far more happening behind the camera that in this entire industry that what I have been exposed to and what I have seen is what really needs to be showcased. Segregation of tables, making sure that only the actor will have the hot water in the chai cup. Like for example, if the sound guy wants tea in a cup, why should he not get the same cup than just the actor? I feel those were things that I felt that, which I have seen firsthand. Yeah. I felt disappointed, dude, because when I was in England and when I came back to India and when I was with my parents, like we have people who are working for us in my home and in my parents' home. I'll call them, they are financially weakened. That doesn't mean that they should be disrespected.
Yeah.
So all those thinking, when you're brought up and when you're exposed to things like that your entire life, like it'll come across like, why would someone mad want to do a show like Occupied? Why would someone mad want to do a story like Kubul Hai, which is about a young... Again, it's a social... It has the cinema and the kind of stories that we want to make. They run across a lot of things that sort of move. Like when I picked the story with Sunny, when we said, okay, fine, Sunny, we're going to do this. Yeah, this is something that we should do. Like he didn't say, no, Pranav, you know, the commercial angle of it. Because we're all aligned. Like people look at it saying, no, Pranav, isme commercial ek dance dalenge, isme ek flying saucer dalenge, isme moodnaal jokul vedam. All of that didn't exist. That's our choice. This is, I feel that everyone has their choice. This is my personal choice and the team's choice in a way. Like we have Mogs who's handling the entire production on the ground with Bobby. I haven't spoken about these two guys. So Mogs Mustafa is a civil engineer.
Okay.
He's a civil engineer by profession. Now he manages close to about 7 to 8 sites at a time and he's into construction. I told him, Mustafa, I want you to be a part of Kubula. He said, Pranav, I've never done something like this. So I said, no, I want you to do it. They will not be a better person on ground to manage people and to be able to get work done than Mustafa there. He's not a line producer. He's not a production manager. Those are tags that people impose on themselves to get the work done by someone else. We have Bobby. Bobby used to work in the IPL. Bobby joined us just after when the lockdown had happened and we were looking for people and he came in as an intern. He's the first man on the set. He's the last man to go. In the first, it took him 2 weeks to sort of get the grind of the work that needs to be done. There is not a single person who's more hardworking than Bobby. And what does that tell you? It tells you that at the end of the day, you have to believe in someone, give them that enough faith and trust and they will give back for the project.
Yeah.
And they will always be with you. Darshini was working in Boxcar, the company that were partners with Faiz and Umair. She was working on ads. She was doing a lot of productions for Boxcar. And I said, no, Darshini, I'm not going to get someone else. You and Sunny have to step up and be able to do it. And that's it. They're the production heads. They're handling everything. EP, production head, name, call it what it. They're the guys who are doing everything. It is, you have to instill that. And when you're handling 75 people, when you're handling people who are the actors, call time, etc. Yes, in the first 1-2 weeks, there will be mistakes. People will fail. People will forget. People will...
Especially people who are doing it for the first time.
Ah, people will make mistakes. And that's all, it's all good. See, the thing is that if people make mistakes, it's not for you to point out those mistakes. It's for you to tell them that this is what the mistake that you did. Show them the way how to avoid that mistake.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you something that I heard in the first schedule, which is something that you will find very familiar with. There was a scooter that was supposed to be moved from one of the locations in Malakpet. And someone came up to, I think, Bobby or Mustafa or Sunny and said, this is not my job. I can't do this. Urmes, who's also part of the art team and also handles multiple cabs, said, what do you mean it's not your job, dude? Like, it's just moving the scooter. You have to drive it from A to B. And then from there, you can go home. She said, no, this is not. I come from this industry. This is what it is. I can't do this. Urmes takes the bike, parks it there. And somehow I get to hear about it. So I call up the guy. I call him to the office. I told him, the next time you say something like that, you're off. There is no job small or big. There is nothing that you can or cannot do. If it is someone asking you to lift up rocks on your head, only then when you can say no. When I pulled him up, he's been working on multiple projects. He said, no, we're only used to working this way. I said, I'm sorry. Here, this is how you work. I have seen Adnan, my accountant, serve food to people with the catering team. I have seen Sai, the light man, going and getting thumbs up for everyone, because that is the camaraderie that you should bring along. Not that mentality where, you know, I am up, I am down, this one is small, this one is that. And all of this is an exposure that I go back to something that I learned not only in Palestine, something that I learned while I was in England. From big actors like Stephen Fry, who said something that was very important. A film is made by multiple people who all align themselves for the story. But there is nothing that is as small or big. Because the minute you start thinking that you're smaller or you're bigger, that is when that you have failed truly to yourself. And that has always stayed with me. I also have a huge amount of, I would not disagree saying that, you know what, I also feel like, okay, fine, at some points you get that rush. But it's always to correct yourself. And Kubul Hai, if you look at it in the entire spectrum of work that is being done, and the way that it operates is very different. And I feel that is for me, that is the biggest strength of Kubul Hai. Not just the story, not just everything. It's the team and the way that the team performs and adapts to certain situations.
So now I'm going to take a few questions that we got from Instagram. Joe Harold has asked, what do you do to ensure coverage? Do you storyboard or do you decide it on set? And I feel like this is something I want to connect with, you know, having multiple directors. Do all of you have different ways to go along with it, or do you all just...
So for that particular question, we've left it completely on Omer and Karthik, because we feel if there are too many people involved, the process gets muggy. So Omer has been handling that directly with Karthik. So I feel that the shot design is done really well. He knows what scenes need to be done. We'll have a discussion. More or less, the discussions have been happened, say, about a couple of months even before the script has been locked, and he knows what to deliver. And at the end of the day, if the output is seen on the screen, there's no one to complain. So it's usually designated between one or the other. And in this particular case for Kubul Hai, it's Omer.
Okay, makes sense. Okay, this one is from Mithil. He says, how can you be so confident for anything? Never heard Pranav saying no.
I think it's because of these guys, because they give me the strength. It's every time that I look at Mithil, even to ask that question, because when I look at someone who's an assistant or someone who's like Mithil, I always want him to be the next cinematographer or him to be the next director. He should not be an assistant for the rest of his life. And when I look at him and look at the spark in his eyes, Sandeep, Satvik, and everyone in the team, Devashree, Darshini, Sani, everyone should go one step ahead.
One more question from Ram Arun. Yeah, this is something even I want to know. How do you go about casting actors? I think you have also cast freshers for Kubul Hai.
Yeah. Some of them are freshers, some of them... So I think the entire AD team did a phenomenal job in terms of being able to get us with a lot of theatre actors. And because Faiz, Omer and I were also in the theatre sphere for a long time, there was a lot of exposure with people, that contacts that we had even when we had left theater, that we sort of remained still with. To cast actors, I felt like, for example, Manoj's character that we cast for Banu, for example, when he came to the audition, you have to feel the innocence or you have to feel the guilt. And
is that particular to that character?
Not just for that character, but I feel for everyone. Like, either you feel the real innocence and the rawness and the energy and the lack of, because we're so aligned by saying, you know, we have to use someone who has Instagram followers of 50,000 people or, you know, the show is going to be minus. Like, the focus of the story goes away. And I felt when Manoj walked in and Lakshmikant uncle, who passed away, he was one of our characters, who was a phenomenal performer. They were people who you would see just on the street and say, "Arey, fuck, dude, I'd really want to watch this guy." Like that face, that innocence. Like I still remember what a fine gentleman Mr. Lakshmikant was. He will always have a smile on his face. And that was the character. He used to look like Mario and Luigi put together. So, yeah, I think casting is about feeling the emotion of the person, making sure that he's able to give something more than... It's giving your everything at that stage. Like, you can always learn something. I feel that actor's performance is not just behind what's being done through rehearsals, what's being done at the auditions. It's what you are able to give them in a way and push them in the right way. So you sort of, as a director, as a cinematographer, and as even a sound person, you give him the elevation. You empower him to become something more than what he really is. And all what you've learned, let it be in film school, just like you, just like me, goes out of the window in the real world.
Yeah.
It's what you learn on the ground.
Yeah. So I feel like there's so much more. I feel like we could talk for hours. I feel like you have the capacity to do that. But I think we should put a cap on this. So thank you so much for making time for this. And I mean, it's lockdown and we did it over call, but it's still as good as any other episode for me. Like, one thing that I always look forward to in every episode is, am I giving access to a person to tell something new that hasn't been told? And the way you have told your story is so emotionally driven. Like, you're talking about giving your everything to a project to make sure that it happens. And that's so important. And yeah, it's been great. And I'm sure that the listeners, when they listen to this episode, are really going to enjoy it. So thank you so much.
Cheers, dude, Ashin. Thanks so much for having me.
That's the end of this episode. I hope you had a good time listening to it. This episode has been edited by NC Vineet and the music has been composed by Rohit Tambulwadikar. Creating this podcast takes up a lot of time and resources. And you could help us by becoming a patron with as less as $3 or around 200 rupees every month. This gives you access to ad-free episodes, shoutouts, behind the scenes, and a lot of other exclusive content. Head over to patreon.com/haveimadeityet. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram for regular updates, the link to which is in the description. Thank you.